Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Greg Borowski. We're less than 24 hours away from the Trump era, and we'll start our show today with an update on the scene in Washington. We'll also take a look at the role some Wisconsinites will play in the months ahead and how Trump's policies could impact the state. We'll then take a look back at Barack Obama's presidency and his political record here in Wisconsin. We'll give you our winners and losers, and of course, we'll take some viewer questions. But we'll start right now in Washington, D.C., with the segment looking ahead to tomorrow's inauguration. We're joined now by Craig Gilbert, our Washington Bureau Chief, to talk about, of course, the atmosphere and scene in Washington. So, Craig, you've covered a number of these presidential inaugurations. How would you compare the mood, the excitement level, the atmosphere surrounding the Donald Trump inauguration to some of the past ones you've been able to cover?
Well, it's certainly different. I mean, just like his candidacy was different and his presidency will be different. He's such an outsider. And in a town like Washington, I mean, even the Republicans in Washington are not really Trump Republicans. I mean, some of them are foreign policy Republicans that actually disagree with Trump on a lot of things, and some of them are establishment Republicans that didn't flock to Trump in the primaries and have qualms and reservations and concerns about Trump. And then there are Republicans who are celebrating in the sense that, you know, they are looking forward to what they can do under unified government, but it's not necessarily a personal attachment to Trump. So that, you know, that makes for a very different picture. It's a, you know, and then you have all the Democrats and the people that just want nothing to do with Trump, some of whom are getting out of town. So it's a strange and different inauguration in a lot of ways. I'm really interested to see how things go on Friday, what kind of crowd shows up, how many of his supporters from outside Washington show up, and what kind of speech he delivers.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, before we talk about the speech, but about the Democrats who are, you know, boycotting this, making a big to-do of that. You know, traditionally, the inauguration day is the day of everybody, you know, kind of gets behind the person in a peaceful right. transfer of power. Are there any political ramifications here for the Democrats, such as Mark Pocan and others who aren't going to come, or do they just... Is that just easily, quickly forgotten?
Yeah, I mean, Mark Pocan represents, you know, one of the most Democratic districts in the country. It's interesting, Gwen Moore, who represents Milwaukee, also a very Democratic district, is going to attend. But she is sort of framing her attendance as, you know, I'm going to be there, but I'm going to be there as part of the resistance. I'm going to be there in protest. That's just my way of doing it. I'm not going to criticize the people who aren't showing up. You know, maybe that's the more politically effective way to do it. I don't know. But yes, I mean, it's very unusual to have this. Democrats are having a hard time kind of treating Trump like a normal president. They would point the finger at Trump and his rhetoric and his ongoing commentary as being divisive and polarizing. Obviously, Republicans and Trump would see it differently. But this is going to be, I think, a recurring pattern going forward for Democrats and maybe for some other parts of institutional Washington in terms of just this sort of dilemma. You've got a guy who's breaking all the norms. You know, we've never had a president this vocal even before he took the presidency as the president in waiting. He's breaking all the norms, and then, you know, that's going to lead to some of his opponents also breaking some norms.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the speech itself. So the last two times with Barack Obama, he had made his mark as a great orator. That Donald Trump hasn't made his mark as a great orator, but what are we expecting in the speech itself? I mean, what sort of message or tone would you expect to hear on Friday?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I think the question is sort of to what, how triumphant is it going to be versus, you know, how much outreach and conciliation are we going to hear? I mean, which direction is it going to go? And we haven't sort of seen, you know, the sober president. If you remember during the campaign, people were constantly predicting that Trump was going to pivot to sort of the traditional notion of what's presidential. And Trump not only didn't do it, but he ridiculed the whole idea that he should do it. And so this is a pretty somber presidential moment. So what tone does he strike? You know, how does he come across? That may not play to his strengths and to his personal tendencies, but what is he trying to do in this speech? I mean, he comes, again, one of the oddities of this moment is to have, you know, a guy coming into office who's much less popular than the person leaving office from the other party. And so, you know, what is his strategy? Does he think he needs to do something about that? Does he think he needs to build his base? Does he think he needs to reach out at all? Or is it going to be just sort of a bold, more audacious statement of, I won, this is my vision, this is what I'm going to do?
All right, and finally, just you talked earlier about the, you know, that Republicans aren't all on the same page with Donald Trump. There are not a lot of Trump Republicans there. How do you foresee these first, you know, few months, the first 100 days going in terms of, there's this ambitious idea, this big agenda they want to get done, but on a practical matter, they don't necessarily agree on the path forward, on even how to handle Obamacare, for instance.
Yeah, so I think there is kind of, Republicans really are torn because, again, they just see this as a golden opportunity. Paul Ryan has said that. They've got unified government. They do hope and think that Trump is somebody who's going to enable them to enact a lot of the things on their wish list. But at the same time, you know, it's very volatile and unpredictable. I talked to one Republican lawmaker. I said, do you guys know what to expect from Trump? And this person said, nobody knows what to expect from Trump. So they don't know exactly what they're getting. They think they have an opportunity to do big things, including rolling back the Obama agenda and then going to their own wish list. But there's going to be issues. You know, some of them are going to be on Russia and foreign policy. Some of them, you know, maybe on domestic issues, where they're going to have a hard time squaring their differences with Trump. And, of course, what to do about Obamacare and how to replace it. Real thorny problems of policymaking.
All right. Well, we'll have some more discussion on those points coming up, and we'll have Craig back a little bit later in the show to talk about that other guy, Barack Obama, who's in now in about his last 24 hours as president. So thanks for joining us right now, Craig.
Great.
All right, we're back live. I want to introduce our panel. Some familiar faces: Mary Spicuzza on my left, Dan Bice on my right, Christian Schneider from Madison.
And welcome back to you.
And welcome back. I've been off the show for a couple of weeks. I got my spot back. It's like the Hunger Games here or something. But Christian, let's start with you on how, you know, some of these Wisconsinites who have some really powerful positions and key positions going forward that either to help advance Trump's agenda or places where they may be at odds with him. And the first, let's start with Ryan Priebus, who is in what some consider the second most powerful position in the world, the chief of staff to the president of the United States. What does Ryan Priebus bring to Trump? I mean, why is he so essential now going forward?
Well, he obviously brings loyalty. He was, you know, he's taken a lot of heat from conservatives within the party for kind of standing by Trump through all this and, you know, through all the kind of intemperate things that Trump has done. But he's already shown himself to be kind of an important linchpin here in this government, even though Trump hasn't taken over yet. You remember, he's part of the Wisconsin mafia, as it were, you know, his connections with Paul Ryan. And we've seen that at work. New York Times just reported that when Paul Ryan needed some help, you know, kind of killing this plan to kill the ethics office, he went to Ryan Priebus, who then went to Trump and had him tweet, you know, something that Republicans shouldn't do this, which then a lot of Republicans backed off. So you're kind of seeing the role of Ryan Priebus already as kind of a facilitator between Congress and Trump. And I'm sure it's going to go the other way around. When Trump needs something from Congress, I think he'll probably be the conduit as well.
Yeah, so go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was just going to say that the question that's been raised this week repeatedly, including in that New York Times story, is Ryan Priebus up to being essentially the Trump whisperer? Is he the guy who's going to bring stability, and is he going to be able to help Trump make, as the phrase is, America sane again? And that seems to be the role that people are asking of him. The question is, can he do that?
Yeah, well, historically, that's a very hot seat kind of position. I mean, it's not necessarily a long tenured person who's going to be there for 4 years or 8 years, but do you think Reince can do that? I mean,
you know,
is that essential?
Yeah, he's never held elective office and he's never really done this. His main role at the party has been raising money. So I think it's a big question, just like many things with the Trump administration. It's a big question as to whether he can do it or not.
All right, let's look at some of the other folks. You know, Paul Ryan, we just mentioned, he's obviously Speaker of the House. Is he in sync with Donald Trump on a lot of these issues? And is his caucus in sync with Donald Trump?
I think that is a lingering question that we'll have to see how it plays out. Obviously, they were not in sync during much of the campaign. They've, you know, said they're moving forward and putting that behind them. I think, you know, but as they have different policy issues or different approaches, I think that we're going to see them not being eye to eye.
Anything that Trump wants to accomplish has to go through Paul Ryan. The question is, how much would he give in exchange for what he wants to get from the Trump administration?
Yeah, I mean, Christian, do you have a sense on that, or what's your take in terms of, I mean, there's these areas where they disagree, whether it's on not just Paul Ryan, but the caucus on Russia, for instance, other issues. Is this going to be a bumpy road, or are folks going to say, like, this is our opportunity, we finally have full control, let's just get along and get things done?
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, Ryan's is going to be able to help smooth that communication, but, you know, Trump is his own, you know, press person. He's got his Twitter account out there, and he'll say things. He'll in interviews. He'll say things on Twitter. And Paul Ryan has no idea that they're coming. Like, you know, last week when he said, you know, everybody's going to have health insurance. I'm sure that probably caught Paul Ryan off guard quite a bit. So I think, you know, Paul Ryan and Ryan's Priebus are going to have a lot of cleanup duty to do in the next few years. So, you know, maybe he can help facilitate that relationship. Reince can, but, you know, it hasn't been shown so far other than the example that I gave before.
There have been a number of stories about who's going to be able to settle down Donald Trump, who's going to be able to control him. We were told early on that it was going to be Paul Manafort. Well, obviously that didn't work. People took away his phone at a certain point in the election, and now we're being told maybe Reince Priebus could do it. You know, it seems like the only two people that he listens to consistently and might have an impact like that is going to be Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, and his daughter. Those two he does listen to, but this is not going to be a typical administration where, you know, everything, you know, where you know exactly what the president's planning.
And yeah, well, let's talk about two other Republican figures here that are very familiar to our viewers. Scott Walker. So in this week, we found out he paid off his presidential campaign debt. He's looking, you know, leaning more and more toward a run. Is his, and the budget outlook's looking better in the state, is his GOP star kind of ascendant again, or what's your sense of his role?
I think that it's looking better than it was certainly after, you know, immediately after he dropped out of the campaign. We were seeing just numbers in, like, what was he stuck at, 38% of approval for weeks, if not months. I think it's looking better. I think we'll have to see who the Dems can come up to run against him. That has been a constant problem. And if, you know, they do have a very thin bench and sometimes a non-existent bench, and if he has a candidate that just is not a strong candidate, I think he could easily coast to re-election. But it's always, you know, it's a long time between election
and the relationship day. Between Trump and Walker continues to be an interesting one. They obviously ran against each other. And at a dinner last night, Trump said of Walker, he's a nasty guy, that Scott Walker.
That Scott Walker.
Today, the Scott Walker people were saying he was talking about how he's a real fighter. So that was political spin 101 today.
He did say at one point, like when he was in Wisconsin for his victory lap thank you tour, he was, you know, Walker was there. He was praising him and Ryan, sort of. But both of them, I feel like that must have been a very awkward rally. The praise is very awkward.
Let's touch on David Clark, who was in the news this week for, I guess, hometown security, not homeland security with this
airport security.
But is David Clark going to get some position? Position might it be?
I said this week earlier that he's not acting like a guy who wants a job in the Trump administration, but he's also not acting like a guy who wants to run for re-election. But I still think that he is going to get something in the administration, obviously not a cabinet-level job because those have all been handed out, but there are any number of other positions. There are 600-plus vacancies that Trump has yet to fill. So I remain confident, based on the people I talked to, that he is going to be offered something. But a number of other people look at what he's done just this week and said, no way, no how. Someone who wants to be in the Trump administration wouldn't be doing these things.
All right, let's shift a little bit now to the policy side. I want to talk about the implications of some of Trump's policies that, you know, he wants to eliminate Obamacare. He's got big infrastructure spending on his agenda, tax cuts. How, Mary, what do you see as sort of how we'll be affected here in Wisconsin? Are we? Is it on balance? Good things, bad things, hard to say?
You know, it's funny. I think he's not exactly a down-in-the-weeds detail policy wonk that we're dealing with. And so when he says he wants to repeal Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act, but then he's saying everyone will have insurance. So I don't think we exactly know what that replacement is going to look like. You know, will it be the Paul Ryan proposal? Will it be a Donald Trump proposal? Will it be some combination? You know, obviously there are a lot of people in Wisconsin who are going to be directly affected by this if they're losing their health care or getting a completely different health care. But I don't know that we've seen down in the weeds details of what Donald Trump is planning to do really on anything.
Christian, let me bring you in on this one too. I mean, so Scott Walker has said, you know, look, having Republicans in Washington, maybe they've put more, you know, authority and control on things back to the states. I mean, do you see this Republicans at the state level working kind of in sync with Washington, or how do you see this playing out in the coming months and years?
Yeah, I mean, Republicans right now, they kind of disagree about the process on how to repeal Obamacare. Do we repeal and replace on the same day? Do we do what's called, you know, dual reconciliation, which would be repeal now, then replace with something later? But there seemed to be, you know, pretty widespread agreement on some aspects of what a plan would look like, which would, you know, be kind of handing things over, insurance to the states, a tax credit for buying insurance, and then, you know, high-risk pools for people who have pre-existing conditions, things like that. In that case, you know, Scott Walker and the Republican legislature would play a huge role because there would have to be some kind of enabling legislation to craft what healthcare would look like in the state. So I imagine there's probably going to be some talking back and forth on kind of how this would be implemented. But, you know, Republicans obviously still have to figure out kind of the process of how they're going to get it done.
I think things move in both directions. What we're talking about right now is what Washington and how it affects the state. And it's pretty clear that the Trump administration wants to move some responsibilities from the federal government to the states. There's also the question of how Wisconsin's going to influence the Trump administration. And I'm talking particularly about Paul Ryan's had a plan for, you know, reforming the federal government in a massive way. We haven't really had to pay much attention to that because they haven't been in control.
Better way agenda?
Yeah. Will Trump adopt that? Also, you know, the fight against state workers by Scott Walker, you know, galvanized him and catapulted him into the national eye. Would Donald Trump try to do something like that on the national scale? I think he's not mentioned or discussed it, but I think it's something that's out there.
All right. Well, we'll leave our discussion there on Donald Trump. We'll have much more to say about him, I'm sure, in the coming weeks and months and years. But let's turn now to look back at President Barack Obama. We have Craig Gilbert again in this segment looking at Obama's legacy here in Wisconsin. All right, so we're back with Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, to now talk about Barack Obama, who's in his final hours as president. You know, Craig, how do you think Barack Obama is going to be remembered, specifically here in Wisconsin, in terms of his political electoral legacy?
Well, you know, he was certainly a pretty remarkably effective presidential candidate in Wisconsin. I mean, nobody else in recent times has even gotten 50% of the vote. His 2008 election was the biggest landslide in a presidential race in Wisconsin since Lyndon Johnson in 1964, and he always seemed to be a little more popular in Wisconsin than he was nationally, whether that's because he was a neighbor from Illinois, whether people just sort of liked his style and personality. But he was a very successful presidential candidate. The irony is, at the same time, you know, his party was basically getting wrecked in Wisconsin. I mean, it was just a series of disasters, starting with the epic, you know, Republican sweep of 2010, and then, you know, the Walker recall and the failed effort to defeat Walker for re-election. They ended up losing a Senate seat. They ended up losing a House seat. And just now they're kind of at generational lows in the legislature. So the Democratic Party is in disarray on Obama's watch in Wisconsin, and on top of everything else, Republicans win the one prize that had eluded them for decades, which is the presidential race in Wisconsin, won narrowly by Donald Trump. So it's a weird record. I mean, and made all the weirder by the fact that Obama's leaving office, you know, with some of his best ratings, both nationally and in Wisconsin. So a personal popularity, not bad in terms of approval ratings, but whatever it wasn't necessarily transferable to his party.
Yeah, let's talk just briefly about the policies in office. Are there, of the various things, Obamacare and otherwise, what do you think will be the sort of the had the most impact here in Wisconsin? Or that we, what changes did have we noticed because Barack Obama was president the last 8 years?
Well, I mean, he's done a lot of things, and you know, many things that could be undone by Republicans, including health care, which is obviously dramatic. Maybe not as dramatic in Wisconsin as some states, because Wisconsin's always had a higher than average rate of coverage. But and also Wisconsin, you know, during the Obama president, for during most of the Obama presidency, has had a Republican governor and a Republican legislature operating, you know, at cross purposes with the Obama presidency. So in that sense, it may not have been as dramatic an impact. I think certainly, you know, his biggest legacy, you could argue in some ways, was, you know, how containing the damage of the 2008 fiscal meltdown, which, you know, could have had much more dire consequences, I think, for Wisconsin and for a lot of other states like it. And I think, you know, most historians will probably give some credit to the Obama administration for the fact that there wasn't more of an unraveling, even though we also had a very slow recovery. And that'll be debated. But a lot of the things he did, you know, with Republicans now having unified control, they're going to methodically work to undo. I mean, it's the reason it's complicated. If you just look at the legacy of Obamacare, which, you know, has been, quote, repealed now, we still don't know what the replacement is going to be. So we really don't know what even elements of Obamacare might have a longer legacy. And we, and while we know what the political fallout was for Obama from Obamacare, which is some political setbacks, we don't know what the political fallout for Republicans for whatever they replace Obamacare with is going to be. So that's a long-term historical story.
Yeah. I mean, traditionally, once presidents leave office, they kind of refrain from being critical of their successor. In this case, you've got Donald Trump and the Republicans vowing to just undo all of these legacy issues from Obama. Do you see Obama following that? Do you see him being at all critical or outspoken? I mean, what's he going to do once he's a private citizen tomorrow?
Yeah, I think he's kind of torn. I mean, you saw it even in his closing press conference. You've seen it in, you know, the people around him. They clearly, you know, have no love for Donald Trump. And I think they, not only from a policy sense, but also from a sense of temperament and style and rhetoric. But at the same time, I don't think they want to fight fire with fire. I don't think they want to get in there and duke it out with Donald Trump, because that's sort of not necessarily their approach to his approach to politics either. So I think he's, you know, he's going to be somewhat torn between defending his legacy and also sort of doing, you know, engaging in the debate on behalf of Democrats, on behalf of liberals and progressives. But also, it's not his style to get in there, especially just leaving the presidency, and start attacking or criticizing or reacting to his successor.
All right. Well, thanks for that insight, Craig. We'll have a little bit more discussion coming up, but you can follow Craig's coverage from Washington and the inauguration at jsonline.com, and we'd encourage you to do so. Thanks, Craig.
Great.
All right, we're going to bring in Jason Stein from our Madison Bureau now and just talk briefly here about Obama's legacy here in Wisconsin. So all of our reporters and folks on the panel have covered him in varying degrees. Jason, what's your sense of Obama's legacy here in the state?
Well, I think back to 2012 when Democrats tried to recall Governor Scott Walker. Obama's political team actually opposed that, did not want Democrats to do it. It went forward anyway. The recall of Walker, it failed, but then the Obama team that managed to stay well clear of that got Obama reelected and won Wisconsin later that year. So in some ways, I think about that when I think about Obama's legacy, which is both that on the one hand, he's been very successful politically in Wisconsin, and yet at the same time, you know, other candidates, with the maybe exception of Tammy Baldwin, never really did succeed in Wisconsin very well during his time here.
Yeah, I mean, Dan and Mary, that is one of the interesting aspects that Obama's team maybe apparently knew Wisconsin better than the Democrats in Wisconsin.
It's interesting to contrast how he ran here versus how Hillary Clinton ran here. You know, both times he ran here, it seemed like he was here every week, and I joked with one of his campaign staffers. I expected him to show up at one of my kids' soccer games, and
like large rallies too. The one on Bascom Hill.
I mean, he seemed to like Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. He liked to go here. He had a connection. He came here, and he's going to leave office as one of the most popular presidents ever. And you know, and Wisconsin embraced him and liked him.
Yeah, so, what does he know about Wisconsin voters that our elected officials here in Wisconsin apparently don't know?
Well, I think for one, the recall was there were a lot of liberal activists who were going to do the recall no matter what, and I think the Dem Party kind of had to get on the train and were not exactly leading that train. You know, obviously they did when it came to trying to pick a candidate that they thought could win, but even that, it was, you know, very much like the unions were trying to get Tom Barrett out of the race and wanted Kathleen Falk, and I think there was a lot of blowback from that. So I think the recall went off the rails pretty early on for the state Democrats.
Walker was able to sort of connect with, I guess, people often in rural communities who were not super connected to politics in Wisconsin, and able to win many of those voters. Some of them ended up also voting for Scott Walker. Some of them, I think, ended up voting for Donald Trump. And, you know, what Obama couldn't do is show other Democrats or translate that into other Democrats winning with those voters. And so, you know, that's something that Democrats are going to have to obviously now figure out for themselves with Obama leaving office.
All right, we're going to very quickly now go to our winners and losers and go around the horn, starting with Dan. Your winner of the week.
My winner of the week is Scott Walker. He was able to pay down his presidential debt finally. And then secondly, very good news from the state in terms of increased tax collections and cuts in spending.
And Jason, your winner of the week is?
Another guy named Scott Walker.
This
Scott Walker is not a candidate
discuss
for president. This Scott Walker is the governor of Wisconsin, and he is making progress on forcing Republicans in the assembly to get behind or at least accept his no new gas tax mantra.
All right, and Mary, let's see, trifecta or not, your winner of the week.
I've got a different one. Reverend Wild from Marquette, the first residence hall built from the ground in like 50 years, named after him, big $10 million grant to make it happen. So none of us have a residence hall named after
That's
us,
true.
So
not,
winner.
Incoming,
not yet.
If you're an incoming student and you look at the list, you probably go, I want to live in Wild Hall, right? I mean, come on.
Greg Hall, also a great place.
Not nearly as wild as Wild. Okay, so Mary, your loser from last week.
I think it's got to be, probably from this week, too. Dr. Houlihan, the Candyman, who's, you know, the fired head of TOMA, who now has surrendered his medical license and said that he will basically never try to practice medicine in the state of Wisconsin again. You know, there's been a lot of questions about his prescribing of opioids, deaths linked to TOMA. I think wherever he will end up, where is he moved now?
He lives in La Crosse.
In La Crosse, yeah. And he's got 30 days to close up shop there. So, that's a rough
week. And Jason, we're going to come to you now for your loser from this past week or so.
Well, I'm going to say Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who at the moment, I mean, in the long term, over the coming years, he may, you know, win his battle to get more revenue for the building roads and bridges in the state, but right now it looks very difficult for him to increase the gas tax, as he's talked about. Governor Walker really standing pretty firmly on that, and Voss acknowledging yesterday that it was unlikely he'd be able to persuade the governor.
All right, and Dan, your loser of the week.
Sheriff Clark, it was not a great week for Sheriff Clark. He got into a Twitter battle with a CNN correspondent, ended up using a racially offensive word. It was, I know if I use the same word, I would not be here on this panel ever again. And then secondly, he had this incident on a plane where he had a mob run-in with a Milwaukee 24-year-old guy, and not really anything harsh, but a very brief exchange between the two. And when the guy arrived at the airport, he had six deputies, a couple dogs weighing on him. He's filed a harassment complaint against Clark. Clark responded by saying that he's going to knock out anybody who does hassles him on an airplane again. Not the most the calmest response to situations. Right.
And his Dallas Cowboys lost, and the Packers won. So
you can gloat about that.
Right.
Finally, we're just going to get to one viewer question because we're running short on time. So, Dan, this was one that several people had asked. It relates to this is from Eugene. It says, it appears there are a lot of Democratic lawmakers not attending the inauguration. Isn't that taking the low road when Michelle Obama wanted everyone to take the high road? Isn't that just childish? What's your take on, is there a political risk here for these folks to not attend, or is this just, you know?
There's not a political risk. Mainly, these are mainly people in very safe Democratic districts, and this is politics. You don't expect them to take the high road. That just doesn't generally happen.
All right.
It was after, you know, it wasn't just him being elected. There was this exchange with him and a very revered civil rights leader, you know, heading into Martin Luther King weekend. Yeah. So I think that there was, you know.
Representative Lewis, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So I think that Representative Pocan maybe would have gone to the inauguration had that exchange not happened. Now he kind of has an out of why not to go. But I don't think the voters in Madison will exactly recall him over that.
All right. Well, that's where we're going to end our show today. We'll be back next week in the first full week of the Trump administration and more happening here in the state as well. So please join us next week at jsonline.com.